back with Jacob Hester in the studios. Mr. Hester, how have you been? Long time no see.
Doing well. The closer we get to football and it becoming a reality, the better.
For sure. Speaking of getting closer to football and it becoming a reality, we actually got further away from football in the last couple of days, but at least we got a little bit of clarity on what the fall is going to look like. The SEC announced they're going to an all-conference game schedule, 10 conference games. They're pushing back the start date till September 26th, I believe, is the date off the top of my head. So 10 conference games starting September 26th. We've heard a little bit lately about pushing the start of camp back. They're going to extend football school a little bit. I don't know how much of that's official, how much of that's more discussions, but it sounds like the direction they're going in. So let's start there. Let's start with the schedule. You hear 10-game all-SEC schedule. What are your thoughts?
Okay, so I understand that a lot of fans would probably hear that and be like, uh-oh, that's going to be a difficult schedule for all SEC teams when you're playing in the best conference in college football and you're going to have 10 of those type of games. But as the former player, you always want to have the most competitive games that you can have. I love the fact that LSU plays Florida every single year. I think that is obviously a more difficult cross-division opponent than some have. There's no question about that.
But of course, you would like the Florida game.
Well, there's just something about you. You know it's going to be bad blood. You know it's going to be a war. You know it's going to be a really good football game 9 times out of 10. And so that's just kind of the former player mentality because –
when's the last time the Florida game wasn't good? Like, was it 11? Like, I remember 11, it was a blowout at home. Jacoby Brissett played quarterback a little bit that game. Is that the last time that it wasn't a good game? I feel like every game since then has been not just close.
Well, at least there's not one that jumps off the page. And that just kind of tells you about that game. I know it was close every year that I was in school. But, you know, your mindset when you're playing, and no disrespect to anybody, but a directional school, and you try to prepare the same way. You really do. You have the same schedule, and you try to even tell yourself, hey, I've got to do a little extra this week to make sure I'm ready for this game. But there's just something about when you walk out of the tunnel and you know that there's an SEC opponent across the other sidelines. That just, it goes up, right? Every practice in the SEC, that first week of opening SEC play, what are all the coaches yelling? It's conference week. It's SEC week, right? They're letting you know, hey, we're in the big time. We're in what matters right now. So I'll be honest with you, Cody. I love it. Now, we have to see how the schedule is scheduled. We have to see who falls where. If they add those two games to what the 8 games we already knew where they were and when they were. So that's going to play a factor into it. But look, you're going to see maybe the best on-the-field product that we've ever seen as far as within league play because every game means something.
Yeah, I'm concerned. My concern is how much they can space games out because I feel like 10 conference games in 11 weeks is going to be just brutal physically. I just don't know if there's – I haven't done the math. I haven't gone back and looked at it. I've really just looked at LSU's schedule and how it could stay the same, how it could change. I don't know if they – I'm sure they keep some of the games that are already scheduled in place and then try to schedule around that. But maybe they – I don't know. Where can they find space for at least a couple breaks? That's my biggest concern. And if they can do that, I think it's manageable. I think it's doable, but that's my biggest thing. Yeah. You know, it's because it's so much more physical. You are going to be playing 4 quarters more often than, you know, when you get that directional school that you can sit guys for the second half and you can get them a little break. We even saw it. We've seen it at times last year where guys who were 50-50 for a game, okay, they can sit that game against the non-Power 5 opponent, whereas this year maybe they feel like, no, I want to play. Like, it's a big game. I got to play. So to me, that's the biggest concern. The upside, though, is super obvious. We're going to get 10 really good football games every week. And then I'm curious what the knock-on effect is. How does this change scheduling going into the future? Because that's one of the things that I've been thinking about with COVID and all aspects of life. I was joking with my wife this morning. Like, we're sitting there in our pajamas at 8 o'clock in the morning drinking coffee and doing work, quote-unquote doing work. No, we're actually working. And then we're sitting there like, man, this is really nice. Like, it'd be nice if we could just, you know, obviously, there's times where you need to be in the office getting work done, but there's times where you can do work from home. Like, I wonder if this changes how we work moving forward. I'm wondering what the knock-on effect is. A 10-game SEC schedule, if the people love it, if the TV ratings are through the roof and make a lot of money, how do you go back from that? Especially, I was looking at this too, like in 2023 is when the new SEC deal is, and it's going to be worth a lot more money. What if there's two more games per team? That's, do the math in my head, 28 games, 28 more SEC games. of revenue, of TV revenue, and what's the effect of that? And I don't know. I think it's an interesting experiment that I'm excited about. There are some concerns, but I'm excited about it.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. I will say, as far as the worry that going through a grueling 10-game SEC schedule on your team, I mean, I understand that completely because that's going to be a challenge. But I can say for LSU and for LSU fans to hear this, remember how great of a job Coach O did last year, because they played 15 games. And if you'll remember, Oklahoma practiced 7 more times than LSU did for the Peach Bowl. Clemson practiced 4 more times than LSU did for the national championship. Coach O does a fantastic job of knowing when he's got to pull back a little bit on his team. Now, it's going to be a little bit different because of resting players. Like you mentioned, he did have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. But remember, even sometimes within a conference game, you have to rest a player. Grant Delpit against Arkansas last year,
yep,
he rested. He got back to himself after that, and it also allowed Mo Hampton to emerge as a guy that can help the football team down the stretch. Sorry, Maurice Hampton. I forgot. No more
Mo
Hampton.
That's right. I was standing Maurice there. Hampton. I was standing there when he literally asked Bill Frankes, "Hey, can I?" It was the most innocent moment, but he said, he just walked up to Bill Frankes, "Hey, is there any way that I could be called Maurice instead of Mo?" And wait, am I saying it back?
No.
Am
he
I
wants
saying
to
it
be,
right now?
Yeah, he wants to be Maurice Hampton.
He wants to be Maurice. Yeah, okay, now I've confused myself. My COVID quarantine brain is not working like it should. I was standing there when he asked that, and Bill was like, "Of course, you can be called
your name, of course
you can do that." So it's Maurice Hampton. Good
okay,
catch.
There we go. So it allowed him, you know, to show that he could play the rest of the year. So, you know, you can still have spots. You'll find spots. And I'm not trying to sit here and dig on Arkansas, but they had the ability to do that a year ago. And that will bring itself back up against some team or another. And as far as not going back, you make a great point there. Because remember, you know, we had an extra Saturday a couple of years ago, they added that 12th game because you had an extra Saturday. And they were like, "Oh, we'll go back to the normal schedule." It's like, no, you're not. You got 12 games. You loved it. You made more money. The fans loved it because they had more opportunities and all those things, right? And so I agree with you. That's probably going to be something that happens is, man, we really loved having 10 Power 5 conference games. Now, it might not be 10 SEC games because the SEC has fought against that for a long time. But it might be, you know, 9 SEC games. And, of course, then you still play that Power 5 opponent. So you're talking about 10 Power 5 games because it's going to be hard to go back. It will be hard to go back to, you know, playing some of those games that just don't move the needle as much. Now, you've heard me say this long before. I'm a big fan of playing big-time opponents. But I also, if we're going to play an FCS opponent or a Group of 5 opponent, I love being a team from within the state of Louisiana, because that way you keep the money in the state and all those things. So there's different ways that you could come about, you know, figuring out your schedule. But I do agree that it's going to be very difficult to go back to the old schedule.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that, like, the Southern game has been scheduled for, was that 2021 that it's been scheduled for? I hope that game stays, because that's going to be an awesome experience outside of football, because it is bigger than football. But to kind of refute my own point from earlier, you mentioned the Texas game, like, You add 2 conference games, but then you get rid of the Texas game, which, let's be perfectly honest, depending on who you add from the SEC East, mm-hmm. in most cases, that Texas game is going to be tougher than, I mean, let's just say it was Vanderbilt. It's not going to be Vanderbilt. We don't know yet, but we played Vanderbilt last year. But it's either an even trade-off or probably a slightly easier game, right? I guess you could say, or at least even. So it'll be a fun experiment. We'll see how it goes from there. Another thing that I wanted to talk about, and this kind of ties in because we're talking about the players, and I don't want to delve too deep into the player welfare discussion because I don't think this is necessarily the place for it. But one of the things, you know, we're kind of talking about is their bodies and the physicality, and you're seeing some guys start to sit out, decide that they're going to sit out this season. I don't think there's been very many so far. It's been very few. But I saw a story on the way here about Ja'Marr Chase, and I think his dad talked with 24/7 Sports and said Ja'Marr's locked in for the season, and he's going to play the season. And I don't want to ascribe judgment to guys sitting out, guys deciding they're going to play, whether that's good or bad. I think each individual case is always with each player, and I think that's how you have to judge these in the context. But specifically with Ja'Marr, what made it stand out to me is, one, I just talked to him, and we had him on the podcast, and his wiring is so different from so many of these guys. Like, he just wants to play football. And what stood out from the last podcast episode where I did the interview with him was I asked him what keeps him motivated. How do you stay motivated after you win the Biletnikoff, after you win the national championship? What keeps you motivated? I was expecting him to be like, you know, I still got to prove myself, or which he kind of said. But I still got to get ready for the NFL draft. I still want to make plays. And his answer was so refreshing. He said, the young guys in that room keep me motivated because I remember being them. Mm-hmm. And I remember wanting to take the older guy's job. And I remember the older guys kind of taking me under their wing. And I have to do the same now. And that was such a refreshing, like, old school football guy answer that Jamar's different. Like, I just tweeted this on the way here. 2 hours after he won the Biletnikoff, we're sitting there at eating a steak dinner, celebrating. And everyone's telling Jamar how great he is. And he's like, man, I just want to go to practice. Like, I just ready to get back to practice. And it was so authentic. Yeah. Like, he wasn't saying that to be humble, to for false humility purposes. No one there other than me was going to tell that story. Of course, I take it here and tell it publicly. But he's that dude. Like, he's just a football guy. And so that got me excited for football, knowing that, yes, this is a crazy situation and players have to make decisions. And programs have to make – everyone's making decisions right now based on their health and their wellness. But for Jamar, he just wants to play football, and it's just cool to me.
Yeah, I think we've seen that really his entire career at LSU. And, you know, we saw the battles last year with Derek Stingley in training camp, and both of those guys wanted to win every single rep that they had. And, you know, that's in practice when really, you know, there's no fans watching. There's no media out there. That's just those guys going one-on-one wanting to be the best. And then I remember being at spring practice. Now, I know we only had a couple of spring practices this year, but I remember they were doing kind of a jog-through drill, and I remember Jamar was kind of going fast because he wanted to get the reps, and I remember Slinger having to say, hey, Jamar, slow down a little bit, because he was out there and he wanted to do everything he could in that drill to get better, and that is kind of the way that he's wired, but also it's the culture. And when you start talking about, you know, player safety and players feeling safe, that's a culture. That's something that the program has built into place because they've done everything that they possibly could to be able to make the players feel safe, you know, because of what's going on right now and because of all the other things that playing college football bring up as well. And I truly believe that. And when you hear Coach O talk about, you know, call us at midnight, we'll play you in the middle of a field, like, that's authentic as well. That's not just manufactured. That happens organically to your team as well. They hear that message. And so the culture at LSU football right now is the best I've ever seen it anywhere. And I haven't been around everywhere, but I've been a lot of programs. I've been, you know, I've played for NFL teams and I've had some good cultures, but what they have right now is the best I've ever seen. And so that aspect of it also makes you feel safe as a player because you know they have your best interest in heart.
LSU is not perfect. Coach O is not perfect. We're going to get some things wrong every season, whether or not there's a pandemic. And certainly in the context of a pandemic, we may make a mistake. We may make a few mistakes. Probably already have. Probably will make more. But I'll say this, and you've seen this with other programs across the country with other stories, players taking things public on Twitter about coaching staffs and this and that, and it's ugly. You don't like to see that kind of stuff. I think LSU is as close to, not perfect, but as close to the optimal as you could be when it comes to the trust between the players and the coaching staff and the program as a whole. And I think Coach O has been the tone setter with that. And I'm not inside the program. I'm in the athletic department, but not inside the football program. So I'm not there every day. I don't see everything. But you talk to the guys. You hear the stuff behind the scenes. Is it perfect? No. Are there guys that are, you know, that have qualms? Of course. That's in every walk of life everywhere. But of all the athletic programs I've been around, regardless of sport, regardless of level, whether I was a player, whether I was a coach, whether I was what I'm doing now as media, this is about as good as it gets with the trust there. And I think it goes back to, I always think of this from Coach O, when he talks about that time where he was out of football, out of a head coaching job, and he had his boys over for dinner, and they were making steaks every Monday. And he realized one day, eating steak dinners with his sons, if I treated my players like I treat my sons, that would change me as a coach. And I think that's the approach that he takes with this, and that's why they're taking the hygiene seriously, everything they do in the building, whether it's temperature checks, and, you know, Shelley Mullenix has this incredible plan to try to keep that building as safe as possible. Whether that's, hey, you know, play this season, trust me, it's gonna be best for you. Whether it's run this play, let's install this new offense, let's hire this new coordinator. Every decision he makes, to me, comes from the right place, and the players get that. And there's that trust between player and coach that they believe in him, and so when he tells them to do something or he tells them something is going to be worth it, they follow through. And, I mean, that's – winning a national championship helps solidify that, but I think that's what won you a national championship was that trust, and I think that's why the program's in such a good footing.
Yeah, and it has to be authentic, because if it's not, players can see through that from the get-go. And so that's the thing that makes it special, is it's because it is authentic, and because you have leaders on the football team and that coaching staff. You have, you know, Coach O, who everything we just talked about. You have Coach Ensminger. We know what the program means to him. You have a Bo Pelini coming back. This guy was a head coach, right? And Bo could have stayed at Youngstown forever if he wanted to, right? But he had a yearning to get back to LSU. When that opportunity made itself available, he remembered how much he loved LSU and his family loved LSU. And so all those things. So it's authentic for the players, and they see it being authentic, because if it wasn't, they would see that as well.
Got a bunch of questions. So last time we didn't do a mailbag. I'm going to just do the rest of the show mailbag, and we're jumping to questions. First one's from Jason Kallmeyer at JWK Photo. He said, chat about the number 18 process. So I know that 18 is a big decision. It's about this time every year where it starts to heat up. I think it's probably going to be pushed back a little bit, at least the announcement of it, just because it's a team thing. And so it's really when the team reports, and all of that's going to be different this year. Like the quote unquote reporting process is going to be different. They're all kind of already there. I don't think they're going to do the things exactly the same, but whatever. That first team meeting is when they've done 18 every year. From your end, as someone who wore the number, who consults with different people about who are the ideal candidates, what are the things that y'all look for? What's the process like before we get there this year, before we decide on anybody? What are the process and the decision-making like behind the scenes on 18?
Well, yeah, that process never really stops, because obviously Lloyd and Caleb did a great job wearing it last year, and then it kind of ramps up right when the season's over. And there's so many guys on this team that I can see wearing it. And when you look at the history of number 18, there's so many different guys and different walks of life that have worn it. Some guys coming back from major injury and overcoming that have had the opportunity to wear it. Obviously, it's a guy that's a team leader. You don't have to worry about him. You're never going to have to see his name in the news for any wrong reasons. And also, look, you got to be a good football player, right? You have to perform on the field as well, because that's part of being a leader. Guys see you setting an example out there. So that conversation never really stops. Of course, we've got our group chat text that we've talked about many a times before, and the names start to flow. You'll say, hey, what about this guy? Or what about this guy? And then, you know, everybody kind of chimes in. And it's always good to have the younger guys in the group chat, you know, your Foster Moreaux, your Lloyds, your Calebons, because obviously they've been teammates with some of these guys. They know these guys on a personal level. I'm fortunate enough to cover the team, and so I know some of the guys as well. But it's always fun to kind of throw some names out there. Of course, Jack Marucci, Greg Stringfellow, Michael Bonnet, they're involved in that. And ultimately, you know, Derek Panamski, Coach O. So everybody's voice is kind of heard, because, you know, those guys are around the players every single day. They see them when nobody else is watching. So it's always fun to kind of get just all these nominations, and then you start to talk about the guys. And ultimately, Coach O does a great job of picking.
Who's the worst 18? I'm just kidding.
The worst 18. There's a guy from 2004, 2007. He's real stubby, kind of slow, not real athletic.
All right. This one's from Instagram. I'm going back and forth here, Twitter and Instagram. You reminded me of the Instagram on the way in. Thank you for that.
Yeah, mine wasn't about LSU football.
Yeah, but you asked about how did Arsenal get so much money for Alex Iwobi. I don't know. That's just one of the rare good transfer deals done recently. Shout out to Arsenal for the FA Cup, though. Although that reminds me of another question that I got from Gordy Rush about what did I do to celebrate No St. Totteringham's Day this year, and I celebrated that by watching Arsenal win the FA Cup. So,
how long has it been since Tottenham won a trophy?
Oh man,
I wouldn't have that long to talk about it. We'll run out of the show.
It's been at least 4,000 days, I think. seeing the tweets about that, so let's all laugh at Tottenham while we're here. All right, this question's from Instagram. It's from Ashley Murky. Hey, Ashley. She said, this is a good question. What's one resource or technology the team has gotten in recent years that you would have liked to have had?
Oh, the walkthrough room. There's no question about that. I would have loved to have been able to, whenever I wanted, just thrown a formation up there and been able to kind of see it through, especially blitz pickup for me offensively, because sometimes when you're having a walkthrough, you're trying to slow it down a little bit. Obviously, you know, your numbers are limited, so you're going against other offensive players, and they don't know exactly how a safety would line up if he's bringing, you know, free safety blitz and they're bringing free safety will or something. And that walkthrough room would give you the ability to be on the backside of that and still see exactly where they line up, because, you know, as you become an older veteran player, it's not about, you know, looking around and patrolling the area and seeing, you know, which guys come and know it's known before they even come because of where they lined up, what their alignment is compared to what it normally is, and all those little small details that you try to find out. And so I would have used that until the lamp on the projector broke.
Yeah, this question wasn't for me, but the thing that I would have liked most when I was in college playing basketball were the cots that laid out, because like people joked about that last year.
Yeah.
I slept on the floor of our Nickel State locker room so many times, and it was just so smelly and gross, and you wake up with a stiff back. To have something to lay on, I mean, that's
how many
like,
times have you used
beneficial.
A towel as a pillow in the locker room?
Yeah,
I know I've done it a million.
So, you know, I used to take my bag, especially when I had like dirty stuff, and I would take my bag and just stuff it with everything that I had and use that as a pillow. Not the most hygienic approach, but it worked.
Yeah, you nasty.
Yeah, it was effective.
Yeah.
It was effective. Look, I didn't play much, so most of my stuff stayed clean.
Okay.
So it wasn't
fair enough.
It wasn't awful. All right, let's get back to the questions. I should have had another one prepared. This one's from Peyton Mitchell. Which of the young wide receivers stands out? It's two questions. Which of the young wide receivers stands out? Is Tolles going to see playing time this year, or is Stevens, Hampton, Harris the main three? So, wide receivers, safeties. When I say young wide receiver, any names that stand out to you so far? One of the things about these questions is like we don't really know a whole lot yet because they just haven't done
right.
a whole lot. But I don't know, any buzz that you've picked up from the program or any just names from the recruiting trail that you remember?
Just for me, I think you know his name's always going to be fresh on my mind because I covered two of his state championship games, and that's Trey Palmer from Kentwood when he was in high school. And we've seen him be dynamic with the ball in his hands already. Look, he's already had a punt return for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely difficult to do at any level of football, and we've seen him do it already at LSU. And I would love to see him with the ball in space. Now, I'm not going out here and saying he's going to put up the production in the slot in different areas that Jefferson did a year ago, but he has that ability. And he's a guy that can run every route in the middle of the football field. He's a guy that in space is almost incredibly difficult to even touch, much less tackle. So I can't wait to watch him. And it's going to be hard. Hey, it's going to be hard to break that rotation because you're talking about Jamar Chase, you're talking about Terrace Marshall, and you're talking about Racy McMath, who are three studs, in my opinion. And Terrace Marshall might be slept on more than any player in the country this year. I think people forget how good he was last year before he got hurt and after when he came back and he missed those three games. His numbers would have been right there in the top of the country if he doesn't get hurt. So it's going to be a very difficult rotation to break, but I'd love to see Trey Palmer get some opportunities, you know, be that guy that, hey, gets a now screen, gets the ball in his hands quick and let him do the rest of the work, get a jet sweep, all those different things that we've seen some guys in space get. We saw jets line up in the backfield a couple of times last year, and you throw him a now flat. So just all those type of things I'd love to see.
I've loved the videos of Coy Moore working out with Justin Jefferson. That's exciting to me. Justin leaves, Coy comes in. He's got kind of that slot ability to him. Kayshawn Boutte, we've heard a lot about him as well. So those young receivers coming in, I think can be really good.
Is that the deepest? I didn't mean to cut you off, but is that the deepest position on the team?
It's super deep.
It's hard. It's
defensive
hard
to back
any,
comes to mind.
Yeah,
we'll talk about safety in a second because that's the second part of the question. But it's super deep, and I think one thing people have to realize, there are certain positions where freshmen can step in and play immediately. Receiver kind of can be. Going back to that interview I just had with Jamar, like he didn't play much as a freshman. Terrace didn't play much as a freshman. They played lot for freshmen.
It is very difficult. It's a great point you make because high school football and college football at that position is different. There's no sight adjust in high school, right? You just run the route that's called. There's so many different nuances to the receiver position. You're going to see six different types of covers that you've never seen before because, you know, no disrespect, it's across the country. You know, cover two or cover three. Maybe you'll throw in some, you know, exotic quarters coverage in high school. That's that's if you're going to a big time program. So you don't see a whole lot, right? So that transition is difficult. But remember, Jamar was such a talent that, you know, they found him a spot in his freshman year. He was kind of a red area receiver because he could get up and get the ball. But in the field, you know, it was taking some time, and that's normal for these guys to learn the college football game. Outside of the running back position, there's so many different nuances that you didn't have in high school football. Now, the running back position is probably the easiest to transition outside of pass protection because a lot of that's still the same.
The second part of that question was about the safety spot, and he asked about Jordan Tolles and then if he's going to rotate in, or is Stevens, Hampton, and Harris the main three. I think you also have to consider Kerry Vincent as kind of a safety. He's not really working out with the corners, so that's another guy that's going to be in the mix there. I think, personally, and feel free to correct me, That's a position. I mean, you saw it last year. You go through bodies at safety. Mm-hmm. You're gonna need more than three guys there, four guys there, even with Kerry Vincent. That's how Maurice Hampton got his breakthrough last year was, you know, Todd Harris goes down. And I think Coach O said in a radio interview recently, or maybe it was at the Rotary Club, one of his interviews recently, that Todd Harris isn't quite full speed yet. So there's still plenty of time for the season. I think there's a number of guys that could step in and play that spot. And Jacoby Stevens is going to move around quite a bit. I think the base may almost be like a 4-2-5, potentially with a fifth defensive back on the field. I don't know. Any other guys at safety stand out to you?
So I can tell you Jacoby Stevens, in my opinion, being back with Bo Pelini is going to be an X factor. He'll be a LaRon Landry. He'll be a guy that's on all three levels. And so that's going to open it up for a safety to possibly, you know, play a little bit deeper when Jacoby's being that X factor, when you have three safeties on the field. But I'll also give you a guy, a comp from 07, Bo's last year here as a defensive coordinator, Chad Jones. Now, Craig Stelz, who's an All-American safety, was the starter. Curtis Taylor was a starter at safety. But there was moments within a game that he would bring Chad Jones in, and Chad would have a lot of freedom to be a guy that blitzed in the middle, A-gap blitz from depth, or he was coming off the edge, or he was doing something a little bit different. There's going to be multiple opportunities for these safeties to be able to play. You know, who is in that position? That's going to have to be something that's earned here in training camp. Maurice Hampton is a good guy to look to, I think, to be that guy to kind of be a little bit of a changeup. And even if it's not him, Cody, even if he goes to a safety role and somebody else takes that role, mm-hmm. there's going to be that role where you have a safety where he has a role, and it's not a starting role. It's not a role where he plays 80% of the snaps, but he is going to have a role on this team that has a little bit of freedom that when he's in there, you better pay attention because he's doing something.
A guy that I didn't mention was Cam Lewis, who played a lot, especially at the end of last year when the injuries mounted up, and did a nice job in the nickel and can kind of play that inside.
There was times he was covering Jerry Jeudy in Tuscaloosa. I mean, coming down the stretch last year, Cam made a couple of plays and earned himself some playing time.
All right, this one's from Scott Burns on Twitter. Said, in the heyday of LSU's 4-3 defenses under Pelini, we had stout defensive ends like Tyson Jackson, Marcus Spears, Marquise Hill. Who will emerge a defensive end this season as electric pass rushers? This one's a tough one for me because there is, to me, this is the strangest position of the year for LSU because of the shift from a 3-4 to a 4-3. You're now kind of reclassifying the edge rusher, and you have guys like Neil Farrell, who I don't know if he ends up inside or outside. I think Glenn Logan probably stays on the inside, but they have those guys. Justin Thomas, does he stay outside? Does he move inside? Some of the names that we've heard at defensive end, Phillip Webb, B.J. Ojulari, as pass rushing type guys, T.K. McClendon moving from tight end. Do you see any of those guys? I don't know. I just haven't seen enough of those guys on a football field to know who could be that standout. But are there any names that stand out to you so far, or maybe something you picked up from Coach O?
Well, yeah, I'm right there with you as far as that's going to be probably the biggest question earlier on in the season because you feel really good about the interior of this defensive front. I mean, we could go through the names. You mentioned one right there. Glenn Logan as a three technique gets me excited because I think that's his ideal position. And so that's going to be the biggest question on the defense. You feel good about the linebackers. I think there are some guys that have been waiting their turn, and they're going to be stars. And, of course, we know you've got a grad transfer who all he does is win championships and Cox there as well. So you feel good about that. The biggest question is who's coming off the edge, and I think you point to the young guys. I just think we've heard Coach O talk too much about this freshman class and what they could mean to this football team. And you've got some guys who have been here, they're early enrollees that are going to make an impact, in my opinion. So it doesn't have to be a sophomore, a junior, or a senior. Now, you've got some candidates, and you just mentioned some of those guys. Now, Andre Anthony is a name that people bring up as potentially being an edge guy, and he'll definitely have the first shot at it. But don't forget about the freshmen because these guys can make an impact. The first day BJ walked into the building, I remember everybody talking about him. And you can always tell who the special freshmen are when the trainers, the equipment staff, the weight staff, all buzz about a guy, right? It's not just the football coaches who are talking about who they recruited. It's everybody in the building, and he's kind of been one of those guys from day one that everybody's been like, man, I cannot wait to watch this guy get out there.
Yeah, Coach O's been so complimentary of this freshman class. It's almost surprised me because they were highly ranked, but I don't feel like they had the buzz, the hype necessarily of some of the other recruiting classes that have come in. Maybe it's just because I don't pay much attention to recruiting anymore since I can't talk about them until they sign. But time after time, he said, this is the best freshman class we've had so far. This is the best freshman class we've had so far, which is super exciting to me because there's been some good ones. That's a tricky position, that defensive end spot, that outside linebacker spot. How do guys move around? There's so many guys who I knew where they stood in the 3-4, and I knew where they were going to fit. Now that it's a 4-3, like, I don't know who's going to be an outside linebacker, who's going to be at end, who's going to be a tackle.
Yeah.
There's just going to be a lot of – there could be a lot of changing. Until I see them on the field, I just don't really know, but I'm excited to see that. That's one of the things that I'm watching most.
And Scott does bring up a good point with the question. They have had bigger defensive ends with Pelini, not really your 220-pound edge rushers.
Yeah.
No, they've been – bigger guys, like when you see Tyson Jackson, Marcus Spears, Marquise Hill, those guys were bigger, they were tall, they were bulky guys. And so that could be a mold that they go in on first and second down, and maybe you switch it up on third down. But when you talk about some other guys on the edge, Justin Thomas, Neil Farrell, some guys like that who you would assume maybe play a little bit more inside, in Bo Pelini's defense, they could technically still play outside in some cases.
Yeah, I have a stat on Neil Farrell that I'm trying to find from my Twitter account real quick as you were talking. But when you look at his stats compared to some of the guys in the SEC last year, like, he didn't play a ton, but he was super productive in the time that he played. I'm searching his name. I can't find it, but I think the stat was run stops. I think he was first in the SEC in run stop percentage, which basically is you stop them from getting, I don't need to go into the details. It means he's good at stopping the run. he was first in the SEC ahead of, like, some big, like,
yeah,
first in defensive linemen, like Derrick Brown, ahead of Derrick Brown, like some of the big names that you think of in SEC defensive linemen, he was ahead of them. So I'm excited to see what he does. I don't know if he's a tackle. I don't know if he's an end. I don't know if he's a hybrid, if they move him back and forth. I'm sure the defense will be multiple, but it'll be exciting to see how some of these guys fit in.
Real quick, sorry, last point there. You want to get sacks from that position. I do recognize that, but if that doesn't mean that's the only place you can get sacks from. So if you do have a bigger body, you do have a guy who's so good against the run, well, remember Bo Pelini's defense. When you think about some of the guys, Ollie Highsmith, Chad Jones, who we mentioned, Glenn Dorsey, guys from other positions that weren't on the edge that had really good seasons as far as getting the quarterback on the ground, you know, Glenn from a three technique. Now, I know the kind of player that Glenn Dorsey was, but I'm just saying it frees some other guys up. And you don't necessarily have to have a guy who's only a pass rusher. Now, you'd like to have one on each side, but that's also something that Bo's done in his past.
All right, as a former running back, there was a video of Chris Curry squatting like a billion pounds on his back the other day, which was that got me fired up. This question's from Instagram at @LSUtoday_. Who will be our workhorse back that takes the most snaps? It's that time of year, Jacob, where we talk about the running back position and who's going to emerge there and who's going to take whose job. Last year, me and you were super high on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Not a bad position in retrospect to be in. We liked Clyde. That panned out pretty well. He became a first-round pick and had a monster season. This year, I feel a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I'm not ready to anoint anybody as the guy. I feel like you've got three incredibly diverse backs, three incredibly talented backs that do different things in different situations. Personally, I've heard a lot of good things about John Emery. The maturation that he's gone through, the physical development that he's gone through, his eyes. I think he had the procedure on his eyes. He got his vision better. He's catching the ball better. Heard very good things about him. So I'm excited about him. But, you know, Ty Davis Price, Chris Curry, both super reliable last year, both made explosive runs. How do you feel about that position?
Yeah, I mean, you're right about going back a year ago. We did feel like Clyde Edwards-Helaire was going to be the number one guy. And I know a lot of people wanted to replace him before he even became the starter. But you could see the traits that he had. And you had younger running backs behind him that didn't really have a ton of experience. And so that was something where throughout the year they were going to have to grow. And you mentioned John Emery maturing. I could see that at the end of last year, just having conversations with him. You could tell that was something that took place a year ago. And you're right about all three of them. They've made explosive plays at LSU before. And so that experience they gained last year, that Peach Bowl for Chris Curry, you couldn't put a price on how much that was as far as value for him growing as a football player. So this is my stat, and I'll say it until nobody listens to me. LSU has had a great fortune when they've had a running back by committee. 2003, 2007, 2011. All of those seasons you were playing for a championship, and all three of those seasons you had running backs by committee. Now, look, you had guys at different points in the season that took over. Justin Vincent, by the end of 03, he was the guy. In 07, I was fortunate enough to be the starter. In 11, you had guys that would take over in spurts, right? And you're always going to have that. But I agree with you. All three of these guys are different. All three of these guys are going to play. I don't know if there's going to be a workhorse, a guy who gets, 80% of the carries. I truly believe that everybody's going to have a role. I think Chris Curry's probably, you're going to look at him, he's going to be a guy that gets your tough yards. Ty Davis Price is such a mixture You know, he's got a little thunder and lightning to him. And John Emery, he's the U&I guy. He's the guy that can make the plays. He's the guy that can hit the home runs. And so you need all three of those factors, I think, on your offense. I'm excited about all three of those guys playing. It keeps everybody engaged. And we know that that running back room with Kevin Falk now as a running back coach, they're going to be rooting for each other, because that's so key. When you have a running back by committee, you can't be a selfish player. You have to root for the success of the football team and in that room. I know our chemistry in 07 was something that helped us thrive. And you had Charles Scott, Keelan Williams, Trendon Holiday, Richard Murphy, me. And we even had two fullbacks. Quinn Johnson and Sean Jordan kind of shared time as well. So we were all playing. We were all engaged. And we were all rooting for each other. This team, that running back room, has the same feel. And so I think you're talking about, you know, one guy maybe getting 50% of the carries and one guy getting 30 and one guy getting 20%. I mean, I can see something like that.
All right, this one's from a couple weeks ago when we didn't do a mailbag. Luke Johnson. Hey, Luke, with a great question. Which of your former teammates would win an LSU-themed Nathan's hot dog eating contest?
Oh, it's a great question. You know, there's so many candidates that this could be. But I think at the end of the day, the only person I can say is Marlon Favorite. I think Big Fave could knock down some hot dogs. He would definitely want to put it on video. He'd want to have it running live for everybody to see. And so,
hello, somebody.
Yeah, hello, somebody. I think Big Fave would definitely knock down some of the hot dogs. Now, I would have said perhaps, you know, Brett Helms, but I don't know if y'all have seen Brett Helms lately. Brett Helms was the starting center for the national championship team in 07, and Brett Helms actually is, I think, 195 pounds now.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so you wouldn't recognize my man Helmsy, but at one time I probably would have said Helms.
I love the football player that quits playing football and gets skinny, like Alan Faneca.
Yes.
Runs marathons now. Brett Helms, 195. I mean, I love that tradition of offensive linemen just getting skinny. It's always a shock to me.
It happens so quick, too.
Yeah, to everyone except for T-Bob. Not that T-Bob. I'm not calling T-Bob fat. T-Bob's a beautiful man.
Yeah,
He's not skinny.
He just looks like T-Bob still.
He's not 195. Okay, you ready to get the hat?
Yeah, let's get the hat.
Time to get the hat.
Okay. Do we have, like, theme music already for this, or are we working on that? It's still in the lab.
I tried to make Get the Hat music last time. Basically, what I did is I took Get the Gap, I played it, and then when I was recording it, I tried to go, when they said Gat, I tried to make it hat, and it sounded really bad. Like, it sounded awful.
See, I thought you were going to tell me, like, you were, like, coming in strong, like, get the hat.
No, I tried. No, I did mix it up. What I may do is just make it really bad on purpose,
okay,
because I tried to make it subtle and good, and it sounded so bad that I immediately deleted it so that no one would ever hear it, because I was kind of scared.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Sorry.
All right, so this week's get the hat, and probably moving forward, is just going to be this week's going to be random questions. It's not going to be no LSU football, just random questions. All right, let's shake up the hat. Okay, here's a good one. What would be your first question after waking up from being cryogenically frozen for 100 years?
How many natties did LSU win?
That's such a good answer. I was going to say something like, where's the bathroom, or Can I get some food? Yours is better than mine. All right, let's shake it up. You pick one this time. Shake it up.
All right, here you go.
Hold on, we gotta shake it. Shake it a little bit more. Okay.
Oh, what is your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure.
I think I got a good answer for this.
I'll let you go first while I think about mine.
Okay, so my guilty pleasure is I love, like, teen soap opera dramas like Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill. Sign me up. I've seen every episode. Watched Riverdale for a while. I'm way out of that age group now, but okay. That is a guilty pleasure.
Okay, so in the same vein, top three show of all time, Gilmore Girls. I love Gilmore Girls. Name my daughter, Rory, my oldest daughter, after one of the characters from Gilmore Girls. So in that same vein, I'll say that. In a similar vein to my answer, my real guilty pleasure is giving my kids screen time. I love giving my kids devices so much that I've had to make myself stop doing it, because everyone says it's bad. Everyone says it's bad for their brain development, and and it's not good for them. They don't need a lot of screen time. But it's good for me. It gives me peace and quiet at a time when peace and quiet are so difficult to come by. So I have started restricting it. And my wife has actually gotten on me because she says I'm being too strict with it. But I love giving my kid, one kid a phone, the other kid an iPad, and then I can do whatever, man. I can sit there. Yeah. I can drink. I can just sit there in silence. I can meditate. I can do whatever I want to. That's my real guilty pleasure.
And that, there's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. That's your woosah time.
Okay. Last one. Let's shake it up. Let's shake it up. Let's see what we've got. No, I don't like that one. I'm putting that one back. I can set my own rules here.
Yeah, really? Like you told me I couldn't do it as fast, and now you're skipping questions?
Okay, here's a good one. What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen on someone else's phone?
Oh, gosh, this could go a million different ways.
Gosh, I have an answer to this. It's not safe for the air. Okay, I'm not going to say who it is. Let's just say someone that I've been in a professional relationship with was one time scrolling through their phones, showing photos of work-related photos, mm-hmm. and they kept swiping and accidentally, had some shirtless photos in the mirror, some shirtless selfies, and tried to like swipe off of it real quickly yes. and just kept showing more shirtless photos. And
mirror pick, baby.
At first, I was going to try to act like I didn't see it because I wasn't close enough with this person to like joke about it. But then I just like leaned into it. I was like, looking good. Looks like you've been eating right, you know, and like asked for some fitness tips. So turned a negative into a positive.
Oh, wow. That's better than any.
Hester was the person in that story.
Yeah, definitely.
Y'all figured that out.
Yeah, for sure. Big mirror pick guy.
It wasn't Hester, for the record.
So I definitely one that I think was a little bit weird. I had a former teammate played running back, and we were playing against the 49ers that week, and he had his home screen on his iPhone because his phone rang, and I had a locker next to him, and his phone rang, and so you know I just heard it vibrate, so I looked down, and his home screen was a picture of Taquio Spikes, and we were playing him that week. And he was obsessed, I don't want to say scared, but Taquio Spikes is a scary human being.
Yes.
And like that whole week, he just had an obsession of Taquio Spikes. And he was trying, he's like, look, if I just see him on my home screen, then I'm not, you know, when I see him on the field, it's not going to be, too crazy of a moment. I'm like, yeah, sure. Like whatever you got to do. I'm like, this is a little weird. You've got Taquio Spikes as your home screen. On your iPhone, so
little mental prep.
That one was a little strange.
The backgrounds are always interesting. I've seen a couple LSU football players that had pictures of themselves as their background, like action shots or whatever, which like I guess kind of makes sense, but it was a little weird to me. Like to me, the iPhone background is a space that you dedicate to someone else. Like I put my kids on there,
yeah,
I put my wife
family,
on there.
Yeah.
I don't want to see myself on there. But I've also seen the ones like there was someone last year who had a picture of Clemson holding up the national championship trophy. And this was before LSU was playing Clemson in the national championship because Clemson had won the previous one. And they were like, that's what I want this year. And so I don't even remember who it was. It was a really powerful moment for me because I saw how focused that team was. But, yeah, it's hard. We're about to stop recording, I'm going to tell you the actual answer, my actual answer to that question because it's so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a million different ways that could have.
It's so inappropriate, but there. I can't say it on the podcast. So we'll save that for off air.
I like that game, though.
It's fun.
Yeah, let's
do it
that
again
next time for sure.
Get the Hat is evolving. It's not set in stone. It's going to change. It's going to bend with the time. Sometimes it'll be LSU related. Yeah. Sometimes it'll be random questions generated. I'm glad I remembered to bring my hat, though.
Yeah, I am as well. By the way, guilty pleasure. If you hadn't checked out Dawson's Creek, it's Pacey's Creek. He's the best character, so just check that out.
I've never watched Dawson's Creek. There's a lot of like 90s shows that I miss on. However, I did see that Saved by the Bell is, one, having a reboot,
yes.
And two, Mark Paul Gosselaar, a.k.a. Zach Morris, now has a podcast. He's never watched Saved by the Bell. He's never seen a single episode.
Okay, now that's weird.
He's never seen a single episode
Great
of
show,
Saved
by
the
way.
Bell.
Check that
so
out.
So he's rewatching it, and they're doing like a rewatch podcast, and he's watching himself on Saved by the Bell for the first time. So shout out another podcast on this show. All right, let's get out on that note. Hester, I know you got to do a radio show. I have a inappropriate story to tell you before you do
yes.
that. So let's hit stop on this, and thanks everyone for listening. Thanks for the questions, great questions, and we'll see y'all next time.
Like nights of old, we fight to hold the glory of the purple and gold. Come on, you Tigers. I said, fight, fight, fight. Victory for Little Reef.